Isn't it great when you have something to look forward to, like the latest episode of this podcast, or even better, an amazing Italian getaway? Well, Explore Worldwide's new Amalfi Coast Discovery Tour is a slice of heaven. I'll be telling you more about it later in the podcast, but for now, I'll leave you with this. Their big blue sale is now on, and you'll save up to 20% on Explore's most popular small group adventures. Click the link in the episode description or book at exploreworldwide.com.au and don't just travel, explore.
A Listener Production.
I think of the menopausal years as a kind of second puberty. And there's a lot to grieve there. You have to go through the grief. You have to grieve what is no longer yours in order to receive the gifts that are yours now. If I'm around a 30-year-old woman, she has things I simply don't have anymore. But on the other hand, I have some things she doesn't have yet. But I have to grieve, I had to, every woman does, have to grieve losing a certain something, and then you receive a different level of gift.
Hi, I'm Jess Rowe, and this is the Jess Rowe Big Talk Show, a podcast that skips the small talk and goes big and deep. From love to loss and everything in between, I want to show you a different side of people who seem to have it all together in these raw and honest conversations about the things that matter.
Marianne Williamson is a best-selling author, spiritual teacher, and political activist who's twice run for the Democratic nomination for the US presidency. Her belief is that love can be a political and personal force. Her teachings on spiritual development have reached millions around the world, and Oprah Winfrey describes Marianne as one of the most influential women of the modern spiritual world. Now, I caught up with Marianne ahead of her Australian tour in February and wanted to talk with her about how we can reconnect with purpose, resilience and hope while the world seems to be falling apart. Marianne, you're described as a faith leader, you're a political candidate, you're also a New Age guru. How would you describe yourself?
Grandmother, mom. When you said New Age guru, that's not the name I would give it, but someone who teaches and writes about and lectures about universal spiritual themes. And also, I've been a political candidate and I'm a political activist. Listen, we're all multidimensional beings. So I'm all those things.
For many people, for many of us, we do feel fearful about what's ahead, and there's this anxiety. And I think a lot about, you're a grandmother. I'm a mum. I've got my two teenage daughters, and they have increasing worry about the world that they're growing up into. How can we lead with hope or inspire people that we love that it is going to be okay?
I think it's appropriate for us to be furious with ourselves for letting it get to this place. And our children, unfortunately, have reason to be deeply concerned about their future. To me, it's infuriating that they don't get to have the same level of basic guarantee that things will be better 3 decades from now or 4 decades from now. You're in Australia, so you have the same environmental concerns. But from what I know of your situation, you don't have the same political concerns in terms of, you know, the complete desecration of your democracy that we have here. I don't think that we can honestly, like you said, your girls are teenagers. Teenagers know what's going on in today's world. I don't think that you can try to convince them that if we remain the same people we've been, things will be okay. I think the issue is to teach them that a great turning is going on, a great evolutionary inflection point, that the human race is changing and they are part of the change and you are part of the change, and that an entirely new paradigm, an entirely new sense of what it means to be human, what it means to be in relationship with each other, nation to nation, what it means to be in relationship with the earth, what it means to be in relationship with our descendants. That is happening as we speak. It is our only sustainable evolutionary option. And you can tell your kids it's a very exciting time. It is a perilous time. You can't lie to a teenager these days. They're too sophisticated. They know. Oh, it's going to be okay. It will not work, right? But truth will work. Yeah, it's a moment of peril. What? How much does it suck that this is when you're happen to be a teenager? But you know what? It's not the first generation that finds in what years should have been happier that there is peril. And let's be happy. They live in a profound and powerful democratic society. There's opportunity for change. We're all part of the change. Mom is part of the change. You guys are part of the change. And let's learn and talk about what the change is and participate in it. And when a critical mass of people are taking part in these shifts within themselves and within the world around them, then there's going to be a profound tipping point. There's going to be a miraculous change. And how exciting is it that we get to be alive for this?
I do love that approach, Marion, and that's something that I can definitely talk to my daughters about. Where did you find that fire that you still very much have? Was there a tipping point or a turning point for you in your life?
I'm just a fiery person. I'm a Jew from Texas. You know, Texans are not subtle people. Jews aren't subtle people. Women aren't subtle people. It's just a lot of vectors come together in me. I'm not from people who sit it out, you know. I mean, in my own private life, I think that I'm almost shy in some ways.
I find that fascinating that you say in your private life, you are shy, but you inspire so many people. You've written so many best-selling books. Oprah Winfrey calls you one of the most significant sort of spiritual thought leaders of our time.
Well, actually, that's very common from what I've read, that people who are extroverts professionally have quieter sides. You know, sometimes people will say, I don't know how you do what you do. I'd be so scared and nervous to speak in public like you do. And sometimes I'll respond, I know what you mean, because I'm scared and nervous to speak in private. So, you know, we all have our, you know, lessons to learn and places where we're growing and, you know.
You mentioned they're growing. I read an article about you where you were quoted as saying in your 20s, you were, in your words, a total mess and that you were close to a nervous breakdown. What was it that got you through that?
When I say I was a total mess in my 20s, who isn't? So the 20s are hard. I think it's important to remind young people today, it's not a mental illness, which this huge industry would have them think that. It's not a mental illness, but it's hard. The individuations of the 20s are hard. And I was very much a child of my generation. My time wasn't any worse, any better than anyone else. You know, I grew up in sex, drugs, rock and roll, but also great enlightenment. So, you know, anti-war and spiritual. I mean, it was countercultural, that's all. And so when I say I was a total mess, I was a total mess because who wasn't at that time? And, you know, I had my own issues of dropping out of school and so forth. Now, in terms of a nervous breakdown, I feel grateful that I grew up before everything was labeled. I am very concerned. You know, you were talking about your own children. I'm very concerned with how many young people today, at least in the United States, are so burdened with all the frickin' labels. So that, you know, I used to see it among young women. I've seen that for a long time. But now you even see it among young men who are so convinced that they are damaged, who are so trained to identify with their woundedness, who are so convinced, really, that they will forever be identified because they themselves are identifying with, I think over-identifying with, stuff that is in the purview that, in my mind, shit happens. Now, that is not to minimize the problems, but I'll give you an example. Trauma. You know, I've been around a long time. So every season there's a new word. Now it's trauma. Who freaking isn't? Donald Trump is president of the United States. The environment globally is falling apart. Autocrats are winning. Who's not traumatized. But we need people who know that we are traumatized, but are developing the strength to endure these times and to be the transformers of these times. Now, I'm not minimizing the fact that some people have truly been through and are going through absolutely horrific situations. But young, white, privileged people in advanced democracies who are so identified with their quote-unquote trauma, most of the time, not all of the time, but most of the time, don't even know the meaning of the word compared to people who are living in Ukraine, compared to people who are living in Gaza, and so forth. So a lot of people feel that what I just said is invalidating their pain. This is not about invalidating our pain, but it is about validating our capacity to rise above it. The world is not going to make it if we don't mature and quickly. This is not a moment in the Western world or in any advanced democracy for men to be acting like boys or for women to be acting like a girl. And if you identify too much with this woundedness and the whole paradigm of trauma, which, let us not forget, an industry is making billions and billions of dollars off of, then I don't see that we'll be able to rise to the occasion and do what needs to be done to turn these things around. Your daughters, my granddaughters, deserve for us to rise now. And I don't know about Australia, but I can tell you in the United States, a generation more obsessed with our childhood wounds than I guess any generation before us is more neglectful of the children in our midst. So I think we need to throw some cold water on our faces and take a good look in the mirror and slap ourselves around a little bit and remember that everything is at stake right now. This is not a time to indulge ourselves.
And you make, though, that distinction between not minimizing real trauma and recognizing the need to rise above. There's something that I suppose I wanted to talk with you about too. You've mentioned mental illness, and I'm someone who had terrible postnatal depression, and I still grapple with anxiety. And I must say, for me, antidepressants have saved my life. And I understand for you, though, you've been quoted as saying that clinical depression was a scam. Do you still believe that?
Well, no, wait a minute. Because when that one line, clinical depression is a scam, that was misspoken. And I'm sorry that I put it that way. Let me tell you what I felt was a scam. And by the way, what I pointed out at that time was a scam is a theory that has been debunked. This whole idea of clinical depression being chemically based. Okay. So several years ago, notice you don't hear people saying it anymore because it has been debunked. So people would say to me, my depression is chemically based. And I'd say, well, did somebody give you a blood test? I mean, before they gave you, did they give you a blood test? Because there's no, you know, you can take a blood test and it'll tell you whether you have some very, very serious illnesses. They'll say, well, no, it's brain chemistry. Somebody who's met you once is telling you there's a problem with your brain chemistry. Sugar changes your brain chemistry. Meditation changes your brain chemistry. Exercise changes your brain chemistry. I have never thought the idea of depression was a scam. I've been deeply depressed. I actually know quite a bit about it in experientially. But that one line, when I was saying about clinical depression, the whole idea of clinical, because it's not clinical like when somebody, an oncologist tells you that you have ovarian cancer. It meant that you went into a clinic and one person who has met you for 1 hour is throwing at you all these diagnoses. That I had a problem with. And I think, like I said, that a lot of what I said at the time that I was so sort of excoriated for, she's being irresponsible about mental illness. I think a lot of what I criticize has been debunked. And the people who were irresponsible were the people who were selling every single person who had deep sadness too quickly, in my opinion, on the idea that there was a chemical basis. Now, I have never said about people such as yourself describing yourself, I've never criticized that choice. I've never in any way said anything to criticize it, nor would I, because it's not my business. And I think that there are clearly people for whom psychotherapeutic drugs are life-saving. And you just said that you felt that you were one of them. And I have not only no judgment, I have no reason not to believe that that's true. And I can feel that and continue to know what I know in terms of young people being put on, once again, in the United States. I don't know what's happening in Australia, but there was a rush to pharmaceuticals, not only around mental illness, but around all kinds of illness, a rush to pharmaceutical use in this country in ways that I think had more to do with profits for pharmaceutical companies. And also I had a problem with the fact that there was such a lie told about the addictive nature of some of those drugs. And people 20 years, 30 years later trying to get off a drug, they don't even remember why they were on it. And then you have serious problems if you don't wean off them medically and so forth.
For you, I've shared what helps me stay well. What helps you stay well?
Well, what I've learned in my life is when I practice what I preach, things work pretty well. I, as a student of life and spirituality and so much more for the last 40, 50 years, I know what to do. The issue is when I don't do it. I know that if you wake up in the morning and you meditate, you will have a different day. I know that if you wake up in the morning and go directly to the news or to social media, it's like you were just surrendering your mind to the entrepreneurs of conflict and sensationalism. And then there's no mystery why you are depressed by noon. So I know that my morning is important, and I know that my time spent with the God of my understanding is a very important issue for grounding my nervous system in something that is eternally true and loving and worthy of my faith. Then I can go out into the world and hold what is happening in my experience without being at the effect of all the chaos that is so dominant today. I know that if I forgive, I know that if I atone for my own mistakes, I know that if I make amends for my mistakes, I know that if I am charitable, not only with material generosity, but with an emotional and psychological generosity. If I remember, if I try to give people the benefit of the doubt, if I have more faith in people, if I remember that life's tough for everybody right now, come on, Marianne, have some mercy. These are the things that when I do them, I ride through the turbulent seas. And when I don't, you know, I think that there are objective, discernible laws of consciousness, just like there are objective, discernible laws of the physical world. If I drop this glass, it will fall. You don't say, I have faith in the law of gravity. I just know how the law of gravity works. And internally, it's cause and effect. What you put out comes back. So I think when you have lived long enough, you are aware of what an enemy you can be to yourself. You are aware of your own. The biggest opponent is in our minds. There's not a devil out there seeking, you know, to grab souls. It's all in your mind, but that's not good news. It's all in all of our minds. The temptation to perceive without love, the temptation to over self-reference, the temptation to selfishness, the temptation to fear and judgment and attack and blame. And once you really know that, and once you've experienced enough to know, boy, I really messed with myself in that situation, then you become more disciplined. So I, you know, if I practice what I preach, my life is good. And if I don't, you know, hello, shame on me, atone, tell the truth as soon as you know it, get it right, go out there and try to be a better person now.
That phrase about our greatest enemy is ourselves, that is so powerful. So often we do get in our heads and we self-sabotage and we tell ourselves things that aren't true, but we convince ourselves that we can't do something, that we're worthless, that we're not enough.
Well, if you are listening to the voices of the world, of course you are. You're going to internalize those voices. But there are about 16,000 spiritual paths. Hello, they're everywhere. The mystical Christianity, mystical Islam, mystical Judaism, the Sufis, the Hindus, I mean, all the mystical spiritual nuggets at the core of all the great religious and spiritual traditions. Plus, there are secular paths of mindfulness and so forth that can get you there. But you know what? I'm seeing it these days like I see physical exercise. Let's not kid ourselves, okay, guys? If you do it, it works. Just like there is physical gravity, you get to an age, right, where if I'm not doing those repetitions and, you know, holding the weights, gravity is pulling me down. That's just the way it is. It's not an opinion about this, but there's psychological and emotional gravity too. And that's anger, self-pity, sorrow, victimization. And if you're not working your attitudinal muscles, you're headed down, particularly today. And we've got to stop coddling ourselves and other people who just act like, oh, well, there's nothing I can do. There's plenty we can do. Just like you don't want to get up and go to the gym. But if you do, you actually want to more. And I think also as a woman who's reached a certain age, whether it's your attitudinal muscles or your physical muscles, it's not even an option anymore. You have to do this to, you know, or the path ahead is truly one of sorrow and pain, and that's just the way it is.
Remember, your next international getaway dream can come true with Explore Worldwide's Big Blue Sail. Their small group adventures allow you to really connect with the culture, not just tick off the sights. Explore Worldwide's expert tour leaders get you closer to the colour of Morocco, the peaceful beauty of Japan, or the hidden gems under the glorious Italian sunshine. And with their Big Blue Sail on now, you'll save up to 20% on Explore's most popular small group adventures. Click the link in the episode description or book at exploreworldwide.com.au and don't just travel, explore.
There's a wonderful quote of yours that every age has its fabulousness.
Oh, I do believe that.
Yes. What is the fabulousness of your age now?
Oh, that's so funny. I asked a woman the other night who is about 10 years older than me. I said, what's the spiritual meaning of the 70s? I'm 73. And you know how with every decade, you don't really get there until the third or the fourth year? So I'm just really settling into it.
Yes.
There's an old Jewish saying that every generation has its own wisdom. And I also think, as you quoted, that every generation has its fabulousness. I've written a book. I have a book that actually just came out that I had written 20 years ago, and then I've rewritten, called Midlife Awakening. I think that creatively and proactively writing our own story for chapter 3, I think for women, this is a particularly big deal because we live longer than many generations before us. And there were generations before us where once a woman passed her childbearing years, she was probably headed out. Now, in societies like ours now, a woman who has just passed her childbearing years has decades on average to look forward to. But nature, when we are still in childbearing years, has an investment in our physical attractiveness. It shows, you know, the height of our breasts and our butts and the voluptuousness. Why? Because evolution is such that nature wants men to want to have sex with us and to increase the probability the human race survives. Once a woman reaches menopause, nature couldn't care less if you ever get laid again. And in a society, right? Nature's like, you're on
we
your
do
own.
Though.
You're on your own. You want to, that's fine. If you don't want to, we don't have any investment in it anymore. Now, that's a huge psychic change. And talk about trauma for women who grew up in societies where our being noticed for our attractiveness is a large part of what has led to our feelings of self-worth. And I think of the menopausal years as a kind of second puberty. And there's a lot to grieve there. You have to go through the grief. You have to grieve what is no longer yours in order to receive the gifts that are yours now. If I'm around a 30-year-old woman, she has things I simply don't have anymore. But on the other hand, I have some things she doesn't have yet. But I have to grieve, I had to, every woman does, have to grieve what I know, that losing a certain something, and then you receive a different level of gift. Now, in your 50s, I remember when I turned 50, and a friend said, 50 is the age past which you don't care what other people think anymore. And it's really, there's the truth there. At 60, I felt a great surge of power. 70, new possibilities and new grief. Because in the 70s, you finally figured so much out. You know, when I was a young woman, there was a woman who was the mother of an aunt of mine, and she said, I can tell you the best year, and you want the best age. And this was a woman of great advanced years. And I was so interested to hear what she was going to say. She said, I'll tell you the best age, the best age. I said, what is it? And I was thinking, is it 30? Is it 40? And this was her response, 75. You're finally old enough to know what you're doing, and you're still young enough to do it. It never occurred to me at that time. That seems about it. But this is the thing. 70s carries a sense that, okay, I'm there. I've learned so much. I've learned from my successes and I've learned from my failures. I've learned what's important. I've learned it the hard way, blah, blah, blah. The problem with the 70s or the grief that goes along with it is recognizing the opportunities that in that form will not come around again. It's different. And so there's a lot to work through there. And that's where I think a faith and a spiritual life is so important too, because God is not held back by anything in this world, and new forms do arise. So it takes faith. But I do think there's a lot of power in having been through so much and worked through it, if you've worked through it. I mean, I went through something that was so traumatic and so brutal. And at the end of it, I knew, okay, you have two choices. You can become an angry, pathetic old woman, you know, in which case people will say, it's too bad about Marianne, you know, or you can break through and be better than ever. Your choice, Williamson.
And what was that that happened?
I ran for president of the United States. First time, that wasn't the case, but the second time it was the case. Yeah. Brutal.
And brave, because you did it twice.
Well, I didn't know the second time that it was brave, because I expected to be given the same opportunities that I had in the first, to have coverage on television, to have a CNN town hall. I didn't know that they were going to come at me with this viciousness and by people who were so intent on no one but Joe Biden having the stage. That decision was made on high. That wasn't the case in 2020. They begrudgingly realized she's an FEC registered candidate. We can't not let her speak at all. So I don't think I, when you say it was so brave, I don't think brave is right, because I was, yes, I was running into a burning house, but I didn't know it was burning at the time.
But it takes, I think, extraordinary courage. I mean, you say you didn't know at the time, but even to be on that sort of stage.
You know, you said that you have teenage daughters, right? So most people who have had teenagers have had a common experience. Usually it has something to do with drugs, sex, alcohol. Something that makes you feel something's going on in this house, or something could go on in this house and I won't have it. Right? And this fierce thing rises up in you, and there's this look on your face. That will not be happening. Do you understand me, young lady? That will not happen in this house. And actually, you're laughing on the inside, because they're so scared of you in that moment. You don't even know what you would do if they crossed you, but they're not going to, because mama's mad. Mama means it. The career that I've had made me more qualified rather than less qualified to see what was coming down the road. I knew it. And I looked around, isn't somebody going to talk about this? Because what Joe Biden is offering, that's not going to win. And we're going to have fascism in this country, if democracy. I mean, I just knew it. And when I saw no one else saying it, because the senators and the governors had gotten the memo that we're just going with Joe this time. The decision has been made. Well, I didn't get that memo. Nobody sent me that email. So I thought, well, if nobody's going to say it, I will. And I still believe that if I'd been given the opportunity for appropriate platforming, I think it would have broken open that primary. And I don't think Donald Trump would be president today.
Thank goodness for voices like yours who are speaking up and continue to speak up. Faith comes up a lot for you in spirituality. And for me, I struggle with faith. I do believe in a higher power. I think for a lot of people, it's a difficult thing to get their head around, and they feel quite uncomfortable with ideas of God or rules and things. What would you say to someone like myself who is struggling in that way?
You know, the Course in Miracles says belief is meaningless, experience is everything. What I would say is this. Next time someone annoys you, or if there's a particular burden in your life, or if there's a particular challenge, just try saying in your heart, because the way you just described yourself, you're not an atheist, you're an agnostic. So just try, you know, just try it out. Say, God, just in case somebody's listening, I'm really at my wit's end. And I feel a lot of anger, and I feel a lot of blame towards this person, and I know it's probably hurting me more than it's hurting them. Please help me to see this differently. Or this challenge is bigger than I can carry. I need some extra mode of thinking, and I just need some help. Just try it. That's all I would say. See what happens. Don't take it from me. Take it from your own experience. That's the only real measure of truth.
I mean, you're so wise. I think you are this font of wisdom, Marion. Is there some practical tools that you could leave our listeners with to help us reclaim some of our inner peace and to lead a more hopeful life?
The first thing is I would revisit something you and I talked about a few minutes ago, which has to do with the morning. Don't wake up and go right to social media. There are three categories of people. Some are saying, you know she's right. I mean, I am a Jew, or I am a Christian, or I am a Muslim, or I am a Hindu, and I know the prayers I need to say in the morning, the meditations I need to do. She's right, but I just kind of haven't been doing them. So she's right, I probably should do them in a more disciplined way. Sometimes I'll say to people about the lessons in the Course in Miracles, the 365 days, I'll say, does it work for you? They'll say, sometimes. And I'll say, well, how often do you do it? And they say, sometimes. I go, well, that's why it works, sometimes. So that's number one. It's once again, it's like physical exercise. Others are listening and saying, well, she's right and I do it and good on you. Others are saying, I'm open to what she just said. I just don't know what book. I don't know what form of meditation. I don't know what it would be. And to that person, I say, if it's your genuine desire, and you sort of say that in your heart, books are going to fall at your feet over the next few days and weeks. Somebody's going to say, you know, I hear there's a lecture about transcendental meditation or something, because I think there is a quickening. I think we're all cells in the body of humanity. And there's a quickening because I think as a species, we sense danger. So I think there's a yearning to self-correct. You know, the universe is self-organizing and self-correcting. Just like the body, you know, every cell is programmed to collaborate with other cells for the healthy functioning of the organ and the organism. But sometimes the cell disconnects from its natural intelligence. But then there's an immune system. And I think we're all cells in the immune system of humanity right now. And those of us who, as you said, you believe there's a higher power. For someone like yourself, you say you believe in a higher power, and yet the next step is, well, then activate it. And you activate it by asking.
So just being open to it.
No, actually not just being open to it. It's more than being open to it. It's everything you need is right there. Everything we need is either right there or on its way. It's not just being open, because there's an undertow in all of us to keep our eyes closed and to keep our ears closed. That's the thinking of the world. So it's really more asking. Whoever, whatever I call it, help me see, open my eyes that I might see. Open my ears that I might hear. And it always has to do with your willingness to see the innocence in another person. You never know who's going to say the thing. Have you ever had the experience? Like, let's say you were having your hair cut and you'd been thinking about something for a long time and you couldn't figure it out. And this person is cutting your hair. You've never even met this person before. And they're just kind of chatting away. And they're just telling you about something in their life. And they say something And you're like, oh my God, that's just the insight I needed. You have to be willing. Once you recognize everybody has the spark of God, everybody has a spark of genius, everybody has a spark of goodness, then you just see so much more and can then receive so much more of what other people, the wisdom of other people and the gifts of other people. And other people feel more, literally more attracted, you know? That's another thing about, you know, getting older. People aren't attracted to you for the same things, but the magnetism that can actually grow within us as we get older. So it's taking a journey that's proactive. Dear God, just in case you're there, just in case, I'm open, I'm willing, and just see what happens, and amazing things do happen.
Marion, thank you for helping open our eyes.
Oh, thank you.
There's so much for me to take away and to think about, and I will open my eyes. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Marion has really challenged me to open my eyes, to not only sort of just sit there and be open, but to actually open my eyes and do some work. What about you? Because I often sort of wait for things to unfold around me. I think that might be because I'm a bit of a procrastinator. But there is so much wisdom, power, strength, and thoughtfulness in what Marion does. And if you want to discover more about her and how she can help you open your eyes, she has an upcoming live series. It's called An Evening with Marion Williamson, The Power of Love and the Practice of Change. It's going to invite audiences into a timely, transformative conversation on reclaiming our inner peace and collective purpose in a world that's increasingly marked by division, anxiety, and disconnection. We'll put her tour dates into our show notes for you if you want to find out more. And if you love this chat with Marion, there are so many more incredible conversations waiting for you here on the Jessro Big Talk Show. Hit subscribe, it's free, and it means you'll never ever miss a dose of Big Talk when a new episode lands. And if you know someone who'd really connect with this episode, someone who is thinking, what can we do about the world, or how can we change ourselves, or how can we feel more present, why not share this conversation with them? All you need to do is to tap the three little dots on the screen, share it with them. It is the easiest way to spread the Big Talk love and help our podcast community grow. Because you know what? I love hearing from you on Insta, on the DMs, or when you come and chat to me in the supermarket, when I'm walking with Daff, or whatever. It's such a meaningful, wonderful thing for me. And if this conversation has left you thinking or feeling something big, I reckon you'll also love my chat with Megan Dalla Camina. You'll find a link waiting for you in the show notes.
Is that true? Is that actually true? Is it even my voice? Or whose voice is my inner critic? Is it my mother? Is it my father? Is it my fifth grade school teacher? Who is the voice in my head? And there could be many. And then if I was going to soften into what do I want? What's true for me? And what would I do next? Then we start to move through.
The Jess Rowe Big Talk Show is hosted by me, Jess Rowe, executive producer Nick McClure. She's a wonderful leopard lady. Audio imager, Nat Marshall. Until next time, remember to live big. Life is just too crazy and glorious to waste time on the stuff that doesn't matter. Okay, now it is time to explore, because now it's time to tell you a little bit more about Explore Worldwide's new Amalfi Coast Discovery Tour. Imagine lemon groves, little cliffside villages, staying in a family-run hotel where the pasta is definitely better than
anything you've made at home. Even better, it can all be yours for less, with up to 20% off in Explore Worldwide's Big Blue Sale on now. Click the link in the episode description or book at exploreworldwide.com.au and don't just travel, explore.